All right. Well, thank you so much, everybody, for joining our weekly Restaurant High AP Series webinar, Thrive, the Road to Revival. Very excited to have all of you on the call today, and wanted to let you know we have a terrific program. We've got some great guests, and as always, we have a question session on the Zoom call. If you have questions, you can put those in, and our guests, and we will be able to read those. We'll hopefully be able to answer any questions that anybody has in real time, or if not, we will get back to you after the webinar. My name is Riley Loggison. I know a lot of you on the call today. I chair the National Restaurant Industry Practice Group at the Davis Wright Law Firm. Seeing who's on here, we're privileged to work with many of you on the call. Our Restaurant Industry Practice Group focuses on helping restaurateurs navigate all of their needs and has for a long time. And whether it's financing, real estate, employment, IP, or distress situations, that's what we're here for. And we're very appreciative and thankful to work with so many of you. It's obviously been a unique time, and it doesn't get any less interesting as we go along, but things are starting to become a little more clear from what we're seeing with our clients, and what we're seeing policy-wise around the country, and collaboratively working together with all those with interest in this business is what's going to get everybody through it, and prospects for the future with that are looking pretty good from our estimation. We've seen recent reports that 8 million employees are out of work in our industry, which is obviously devastating. It's everybody's goal to get everybody back to work sooner than later. Fortunately, some funds have started pouring in for unemployment for some folks, but obviously much of it's just a drop in the bucket for the harm that's been caused, and a lot of people are struggling. Just to note, we set up Restaurant Employee Relief Fund with Guy Fieri and the National Restaurant Association Educational Foundation, along with PepsiCo, Uber Eats, and a number of other great companies. If you might have employees that have applied for it already, 30,000 applications are being processed at the moment for $500 checks to each employee. Every dollar that's donated to this fund goes straight to the employees. The NRAEF is charging no overhead at all for their services, so it's 100% pass-through to the employees. So we thank Guy Fieri. We thank all involved, all the great sponsors. If you know of anybody that wants to contribute to this, or if you want to, it's go to the website and please do so. So with that, we're going to launch right into what we see as a really optimistic part of the industry, and speaking with leaders who have been doing exceptional things for a long time and are really a guiding light through the period that we're all going through. So today we have with us Kim Malik, founder and CEO of Salt and Straw Ice Cream. And Kim has an extensive history in the restaurant and food service business. Growing up in Montana, she found herself later on in life working with Starbucks as one of the early employees there, working under Howard Schultz and team. And, in my experience with Kim over the years, I can tell how valuable that experience was in helping her understand ways to develop a company in a manner that's going to be very successful, and a strategy that she has designed and implemented with her team at Salt and Straw Ice Cream. And if any of you have had the pleasure of being to Salt and Straw Ice Cream, you'll know what we're talking about. It's a very special business. It's one where an incredible amount of work and effort is taken on curating the product. Kim's cousin Tyler Malik has been in charge of the ice cream and all the amazing flavors that they produce on a regular and on a seasonal basis. Kind of mind-boggling how they come up with these things and execute at such a high level. But also what I think is really exciting and interesting is how they have thoughtfully and successfully penetrated multiple markets in such a short period of time. As everybody on the call knows, being successful in one market is very difficult, but being able to do so in another market and another market and another market in a relatively short period of time is sometimes downright impossible. And they have done a really great job of making sure that they're putting themselves in the best position for success coming into any market. And, to their philosophy and their creed is to be the happiest part of anybody's day. And Kim really exudes that in you know everything she does and how she works with her team and all of her partners in the business. So Kim, it's a pleasure to welcome you to our call.
Thank you, Riley. Can you follow me around everywhere the next couple of weeks?
if only we weren't, you know, utter work from home. Absolutely.
Oh, there's that. Yeah, okay.
Personally, you've got three kids. You've got a really busy lifestyle beyond your work. How are you and your family hanging in there?
Thank you for asking. Yeah, I'm, as everybody else I'm sure is, I've been working around the clock over the past 4 weeks while also homeschooling three little kids and helping my husband prepare and head off to work in our local hospital here in Portland. So he's been working on the front lines. So we're dealing with I guess the elements of this coronavirus situation on all fronts here at our house.
Well, you know, thinking of you and your family, obviously, as you're going through this, and I know running a company under these circumstances, you know, is not the easiest thing for anyone. You know, going into you know this crisis, how are things going for Salt and Straw?
Oh, we had our very best start to a quarter we've ever had. You know, we've been growing quite a bit over the past 10 years. We started in 2011, and, you know, with growth always comes these different pushes and pulls, and it felt like we really had all the plates spinning on top of a really tall pole in just the perfect unison. So we were having, you know, double digit comps and, you know, our best ever sort of flow through to the bottom line. And we were just getting really fired up for our first opening on the East Coast. We have a couple stores planned in Miami for this year. So really, really great momentum come February of this year.
So, and obviously the crisis hit and hit everybody hard. You know, what were kind of the immediate impacts on you and the business and kind of how has it affected it, you know, thus far?
Well, so I can remember sitting in my office and I was getting sort of behind the scenes updates from my husband about what they were talking about at the hospital. And we started to immediately see our sales drop off by about 70%. And we started to envision a world where this was going to be going on for, you know, 2-3 months. And we make all of our own ice cream. We have a kitchen in LA and one in Portland. And our business is built on really great, thriving community gathering places. And so we're known to have, you know, really long lines and people, you know, have gotten engaged in our lines and job offers. And it's all about community. And so we quickly realized that business model wasn't safe, you know, as we were heading into this crisis. So we made the decisions to close all of our stores pretty quickly and shut down our kitchens. And we had some ice cream left in our Portland kitchen. And so a small team kind of cobbled that together and started shipping ice cream out via our e-commerce platform that we had. And we've been running that way for a little while now.
So I know, you know, this has been difficult for pretty much every restaurant group around the country, and some really tough decisions were needed to be made early on. For you, what were the hardest things that you had to do as a leader?
Well, you know, I have three little kids, so they're really important to me, but laying off 650 people who I consider to be family was unimaginable. closing our stores to the public after we'd worked for 10 years to build them. It took 10 years to build our company, and it took about 5 hours to close the stores down.
Yeah, and Kim, you know, you can hear it in your voice, and, you know, I think that's, you know, the wonderful thing about you and so many other leaders. The decisions that had to be made for everybody during this period have been incredibly difficult, and nobody wanted this to happen. And being in a spot where had to make these difficult choices to save a business has been so challenging for everybody. You know, you are one that, you know, has always focused on being relentlessly optimistic and positive and getting lots and lots of situations. You know, you and your team, like every restaurateur, this business wasn't built on or by the tenor. And you rallied things together. And I know you've done things over the last few weeks with the business where you're seeing some bright spots. So what are some of the things that, you know, the silver linings out of the circumstance that, you know, are evolving from your perspective?
Well, thank you. You know, it's been a fascinating journey to be on. The first phase of laying people off was, I still think I may wake up from this nightmare any moment and just say, I can't believe I had this crazy dream. But we worked through that phase and then headed into some, you know, conversations and negotiations with our landlords that are ongoing and, you know, working on shoring up, you know, the funding needed to get through this and to the other side. So after we got through those three phases, probably over the past week or so, we've been able to start to look up to the horizon and look forward to the future. And I can clearly see that, you know, this isn't going to come back, obviously, to state the obvious here, in the way that things were over the next several months, and it could even be longer. And so we are fortunate that with our business being ice cream, we have an opportunity to leverage our unique IP around innovative flavor experiences and bring them forward as different sales channels. We started this work before the crisis hit, and, you know, being a really busy, successful business, we were focused on growth and we were focused on throughput. And, you know, it's always hard to kind of have a part-time job on the side to develop these other sales channels. So all of a sudden, these became my full-time job. and so we, you know, have put together a plan for, you know, what our in-store experience is going to be in this new normal. And it's quite different, but we think exciting too. We then, you know, pivoted to a pretty significant off-premise strategy, which ice cream has a fantastic opportunity. You know, if we divide the country up into 2-mile segments, we have a chance to really put together a plan to, you know, almost have national distribution going straight to customers from our off-premise and third-party delivery partnerships. So those were two areas that we started to craft right away. And, you know, I dusted off my old business plan from 11 years ago and literally started rewriting the rules of the game on every single front. We're taking a whole fresh look at wholesale and how we're going to approach that. And then lastly, you know, double down in our e-commerce business. We're already on track to hit sales with our e-commerce business that we were hoping to hit maybe 3 years from now. So we can see some real glimmers of hope, and we know that people are going to want a really special treat for themselves during this time and especially after this time. But we think people will be coming together in new ways. And so we're recrafting our business plan to accomplish that. And then, of course, managing our, you know, our kitchen operations and our G&A accordingly, because we still think we can be and will be a profitable business as we come through this and land on the other end at the end of the year. But we're going to need to navigate it really, really carefully. And the funny thing is, if we do execute this plan the way that we think we can, you know, I don't want to say there's anything, you know, I'm not trying to be Pollyanna about this because this sucks. But I think if we execute this 5 years from now, we're going to be such a strong business, much stronger than we would have been, because we will have had the opportunity to invest in meaningful ways to diversify our sales base. So we're fired up about that at this point. Our team is fired up about it. And, you know, we have a fire in our belly and we believe we can go out and accomplish even more than we had planned to as a result of this.
Well, that's great, Kim. And I think anybody, if you have questions, you know, that you'd like for Kim to answer, feel free to send those over via the Zoom platform. I mean, Kim, I see a lot of comments of support coming in here for you. Really awesome. You know, in terms of, you know, advice to others, you know, we're all going through this together. Do you have any tips on, you know, how to stay strong and focused and optimistic and rally your team like you have? I mean, what are some of your secrets to success in that area?
I mean, one of the things that I think I've been really proud of with our team and our company throughout the past 4 weeks is, you know, you said at the beginning that I'm relentlessly positive, and our team has stayed really positive and focused on the next thing we have to get done. You know, as an entrepreneur, you spend so much time living in the future and envisioning the future and creating that. And so to be pulled into, you know, this immediate time and having to make every decision real time with the stakes being so high has been really fascinating for me. And I think, you know, I think for us, what's been most important is staying laser focused on where we, on our values and our mission, and where we think this new path is going to take us, and saying no to a lot of things we would have done in the past and a lot of opportunities that come our way. I think that becomes one of the most important things for all of us to have to do at this time. You know, what we say no to is going to become more and more important because we have limited time and resources. And so the things we say yes to and the things we focus on have to be of the utmost importance. I just hung up the phone with my team and, you know, we were even talking about, you know, we have a limited menu and what products do we start to bring back? And each of those we're making excruciating decisions around. So I think that ability to stay focused on that, on really what matters, and let a lot of that other stuff go. It's hard and it's painful, but it's also freeing and important. And then at the same time, I think as a leader, making sure that we stay positive and stay focused on the fact that we're going to recover from this and we're going to build back. And share that with our team, that ability and that gift to bring them along on that journey is what this is all about right now.
Is it going to be a complete reshift in strategy?
That's right.
Meaning, do you plan to open some additional locations? That's a question from one of the listeners after this crisis. Or is the platform going to be direct consumer or a combination of both retail stores and DTC?
Yeah, we are going to start opening our shops actually over the coming weeks for takeout and delivery only. Our kitchen in Portland just reopened. We brought 20 people back to work yesterday. We have put together some really impressive safety protocols and procedures that the team feels really energized by. And, you know, for us, it's a matter of once we build the inventory back in our kitchens, we can slowly start to bring our stores back online. And we plan to be able to reopen them, but in a very different way, you know, come this summer. And it's going to be hot and sunny out, and people are going to want to come out of their houses and, you know, enjoy the really simple, important pleasures in life. And we think ice cream is one of them. And so we're building plans around how to make that safe. And we will definitely open our stores up again.
And, you know, one question we have from a listener is, how are you keeping everybody on your team informed about what's going on with the company? Are you in communication with the broad group, including, you know, those that have been laid off, or do you have a, you know, communication plan that's working for you?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we do weekly video calls with our entire team that was laid off, and I give them an update about what's going on with the company, and then there's a Q&A session. We have a blog, an internal blog that the entire company, current and folks who are laid off, can access to post updates and questions and resources and stay in communication as a broader company. And it's just been really helpful. And then we have an email address that we have a team of people monitoring on a daily basis so that anyone in our former team who needs help or resources can stay connected and get answers from the company. So we want everybody to stay really connected and ready to come back to work. And it's worked. People seem to appreciate it quite a bit.
How have your landlords been? That's another question from a listener. Have they been willing to be flexible and negotiate with you?
Yeah, so I included our kitchens. We have 23 landlords. And I would say overall, people have been very open to, you know, meeting and talking about what the solutions are going forward. We're spending a lot of time on the phone with them explaining our situation so that they can clearly get their heads around what's going on with the company and what the future looks like for us. And then we're working collaboratively with them to figure out, you know, how they can, because we don't expect them to be stuck holding the bag. We can't take all of this on financially either. So, you know, working collaboratively with them, even engaging with their lenders and talking through, you know, how we can come at this together to come up with the right solution. But you know, for the most part, people have been really understanding and collaborative, I would say. But it's hard. I think right now that's the biggest head scratcher for me, is where how we're going to move through this together with our landlords to, you know, make sure that we are able to figure out how, you know, this time that we're closed, how we account for that rent or don't, and then, you know, what does the new world look like on the other end of this as we all come back?
Yeah, it definitely is a challenging situation on the real estate side. We'll touch on that a little bit later in the webinar today. We had a question about your changes to your service style. You know, exactly what do you anticipate those, but maybe, you know, short-term COVID related, but are do you anticipate any permanent changes to service style?
Mm-hmm. I hope not permanent. I mean, for us, if you've been in line at Salt and Straw, you know, so much the magic is getting to the front of the line and getting to sample every single flavor and hear the stories behind how they were created. And it's a pretty up close and personal experience. So we're working on several different technology solutions that will help folks, you know, have more of a touchless experience and, you know, maybe even have, you know, quick reservations for to come in and experience those tastings and samplings. So we're reimagining for the short term, and we're thinking of it, you know, in 6, 9, 12 months, that we need to be able to provide people the opportunity to get their ice cream to go really easily, to have sampling experiences that are touchless, And we're hoping, I'm hoping, I believe, that won't be forever, but we are looking to have these new service models in place for, you know, as long as a year.
You know, on behalf of ourselves and everybody on the call here today, we really appreciate you taking some time to share some information about you and your business. And we're all, you know, thinking for you, root for you and your team, like everyone, as we get through this. I know there's some questions that have remained unanswered, and we'll get those to Kim and try to answer those as well. But really appreciate everything, Kim. And, thank you again and wishing you the best.
Terrific. I really appreciate getting to share our story with everybody. And, you know, feel free to order ice cream online. We'll hand pack it for you and get it to you.
And can we get a plug for Salt and Straw? Where can people buy it?
Saltandstraw.com. You can order. It's a really nice way to treat your friends and family. And I just hope everybody stays really safe, and you know, we're in this together. We're going to figure this out together, and we're going to come out stronger as an industry. So let's do this. Let's do this, everybody. I love you.
Let's do it, Kim. Thank you.
Bye.
Well, big thanks to Kim for spending time with us today. Going to move into the next guest on our program today. A number of folks on the line have worked with him and his company, North Point Advisors. North Point Advisors is a leading boutique investment bank based in San Francisco. We've had the good experience to work with them on many deals in the restaurant space over the years, and I can tell you, nobody does a job better than North Point Advisors with respect to M&A and finance in the restaurant space. They have been there and done it for a long time and really know the space as well or better than anyone. Personally, I had the good fortune to work with our guest, Matt Kelly, on lots of deals, and they had an extremely busy 2019 and off to a really robust 2020. And then we hit this. And so, Matt, welcome to the call. Great to have you here with us.
Thank you, Riley. It's great. It's really great to be here with you, and we're honored to be involved in this incredibly insightful weekly calls that you've been doing. So we really appreciate it.
Well, Matt, you and your team have done kind of a who's who of deals. You know, everything from Jimmy John's to a lot of the emerging ones, the Cooper's Hawk deal last year. I mean, go on, and people can, you know, see your website. It's been, oh wow, there was a deal and you guys did it. So, really helpful to kind of, have you here to get a little bit of perspective of kind of, how things were going into this. You know, we know that the deal market's been interesting for a couple of years in the restaurant space. I mean, there's a period of time, 2014 to 2016, where things were just red hot with growth brands, and then things kind of stabilized and shifted a little bit, where it was kind of a haves and have nots, and lots of bigger, kind of larger M&A. But on the growth side, there were fewer high valuations and so forth. So the market was a little bit, I think, tempered, for a while, at least with respect to growth and so forth. But from your perspective, I mean, how are things looking before this hit for 2020?
Wow, isn't that a nice, fun topic to talk about? What things looked like a year or two ago, or even 2 months ago. So, it was a 10 out of 10. It was an 11 out of 10. The market was as good as it's been. So, it's fun to think about that, and it's fun to think that that's going to return sometime soon, and we all hope it does. But, maybe before I just jump into that, I do want to say first, following Kim Malik and hearing, in her story and her great story with Salt and Straw, and what they've done and how they've navigated these times and how that's happening across the entire industry. I mean, this is an industry, it's the second largest industry in America. Half of the meals in America are eaten outside the home. And this is a vital part of how America eats, and it's been completely disrupted. And getting it stabilized and stabilized quickly and is critical, you know, for our employees in this industry and for all of you on the phone. I mean, I just want to say first and foremost that we share your pain. I mean, we have to acknowledge that this is a painful time for everyone. It's obviously, you know, awful for those truly impacted by the virus and, you know, the healthcare workers. And I say first and foremost, I hope everybody's families and team members and yourselves are safe, healthy. But, you know, more specifically, in the restaurant industry, you know, the last 6 weeks, you've all been facing some terrible decisions that you know, we've been, you know, never busier in terms of talking with clients and operators about things they never thought they'd, you know, really have to, you know, navigate. You know, everybody has downside models that they look at, but nobody says, let's close all our, you know, what does it look like if we close all our locations? What does it look like if revenue goes to zero or down 70%? So our caps are off to you for how you've navigated it professionally, you know, with, you know, great spirit and leading your employees. I really mean that. I mean, I remember when I was talking on a Sunday night with Rahul Agarwal at Brentwood, and he shared with me that he had heard that the government was just about moved towards a shelter in place and that things were going to get shut down. And I just thought there is absolutely no way that's going to happen. And the next day it did. And, you know, unbelievable, really, what you've all been doing. So I'd say, you know, it is a tough time. We acknowledge that, but we also know that things are getting better. You know, while we've, you know, lost 8 million jobs, Riley, to your point, almost 2/3 of the restaurant workforce and or they've been furloughed, they've been done in a thoughtful way. And, you know, I would just say thank you to everybody on this phone call. Most importantly, because you guys are the ones driving this industry and you're the reason why we are hopeful. So tying that back to your question about where were we before, the market was as good as it's ever been. I mean, we, as you know, Riley, we do a lot of restaurant deals. We've been around for 15 years. We do 200 deals in that time frame, and we do a lot in the restaurant sector. It's not all we do, but we've got north of a 50% market share in it. We love this space. And I would tell you that, you know, last year it was a record year. 2019 was a record year for us. Over 2018, which was a record year. And we have a backlog for 2020 that would have put us on tap to, you know, beat 2019. Now, clearly that's changed. You know, we, you know, any sale process that requires debt, you know, is challenging to get done right now, obviously, for obvious reasons. You know, our buyers are private equity groups. They are strategics. They're focused on their own portfolio companies. They're focused on their own businesses, if you will. And so that has been, you know, certainly something that we have slowed down. We're flattening that curve in our business, if you will, you know, to make sure that these are, you know, most, for the most part, our companies, our clients are great brands that are expecting great outcomes. And so, you know, we've got to make sure we're not pushing a really good hand into a tough market. So that's exactly where we are right now with, you know, our sale M&A deals. And so maybe I'll pause there for a second and see if that kind of ties to what you were asking.
Oh, definitely, Matt. Keep on going. So I guess that segue into kind of what things were and now what things are. Kind of, you know, you said the market is open. What exactly does that mean?
You know, I would say there's reasons to be hopeful. I mean, you know, what gives me hope? You know, I look at things like, you know, reports from, you know, industries and strategic thinkers who are way smarter than I'll ever be, you know, and Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley, who still believe the second half of the year is going to see economic output go up. Now, we'll see if that's the case, but that's what they're still saying, even with all this news. You know, we still see, you know, the market continue to rally. And there's been a lot of bad news in overall, not just in our industry. But what we see is that gives us hope, you know, really big picture. The conversation in the last 5 to 6 weeks has totally shifted. I mean, it used to just be all about the virus centric, you know, and now there's a great deal of talk about reopening the economy and the world is going to come back. And people get that. You know, we've all sometimes when you're in those dark moments, things aren't as bad as they really seem. Just like when you're in the best moments, things aren't as great as they seem. So, you know, everyone is so focused on the virus 3, 4, 5 weeks ago and all the things that you were doing as operators to navigate that. And now it's not just the politicians that are talking about when we reopen and how we reopen as safely as possible. And that will take some time and there'll be some nuances to it. And there'll be parts that we get right and parts that we get wrong. And we'll have to go back and fix those things. But it's allowing you all as real operators to frankly go back and focus on again what you can control. How do you reopen in a post-COVID, you know, 19, you know, learning about it world? How do you communicate with your staff and your consumers about your future together? I mean, you know, what are the different channels to Kim's point about, you know, go online and order, you know, online, you know, and that's a place where a lot of energy and attention is going to go. And it was going there already prior to this, but, you know, if people didn't really spend a lot of time there. They certainly have been. How do you handle seating capacity? You know, these are not easy things to work through, but they're a lot better than the decisions you've been making for the last, you know, 5 or 6 weeks. And importantly, that ties to, you know, that related topic that a lot of companies are dealing with about getting capital. You know, we've seen, you know, a lot of people going to the government for capital this time. You know, I'd say back in 2008, 2009, you know, Charlie Munger of Berkshire Hathaway came out and said he's not getting a lot of phone calls right now because, you know, a lot of that is, whereas, you know, 10 years ago, they were putting billions of dollars into Goldman Sachs, you know, and I think part of that is the government was very, very quick to provide different plans and PPP and the CARES program, and everybody's been very focused on getting a lot of capital from the government. And some of that is shifting as well. And the good news is the market is open. You know, I'm talking about deals like seeing Rourke putting $200 million into Cheesecake Factory, and a fantastic brand, a great group in Rourke. And that is a real sign of, you know, strength, especially into the casual dining sector in our most difficult hours. I'm talking about Shake Shack being able to tap, you know, $150 million of capital. I'm talking about Landry's, you know, being able to secure, you know, meaningful and oversubscribed debt financing that's going to allow them the capital to get back to their position of strength. So I'm talking about the conversations that we have with dozens and dozens of, you know, great private equity groups that have ample capital on the sideline, you know, and they want to deploy it in good businesses. And they are telling us we are open for business. We do not want to be predatory here. We're not trying to come in and take advantage of a really bad situation for everyone. But some good companies do need money. And we want you to know we're here to provide it in a thoughtful way. So those are the things when I say that the market is open that we're seeing and feeling as it relates to capital for, you know, surviving this time and then capital turning your attention to growing once this time ends.
So Matt, if you're an emerging brand, you know, and you were maybe considering a process or in a process before this hit, good company, you know, maybe had been solicited by folks, you know, for interested in investment. I mean, you know, what's kind of the general, right? They come to you now, kind of what are you telling them?
Yeah, I think it depends. I mean, if they've got capital right now and access to capital with existing partners, or they've got a balance sheet, you know, you hug on that cash. You know, you make sure, you know, it seems to me that the 100-year flood kind of seems to come once every 10 years at this point. So, you know, so if you're in a situation where you've got the capital, you've run your new budget to see that it can last you for 12, 18, 24 months, and you don't have to go out and go raise capital, you know, that's a good situation to be in. Because the capital's there, but like anything, when you need to go get it in a tough market, that capital can be expensive. It can be a little bit more painful than you'd like. You know, I would tell you that 6 months ago, before this all happened, it was an awesome environment. And if you were, you know, a seller or you were raising capital for a really good entrepreneurial business, you'd have a lot of people lining up and giving you great, you know, because of the competitive situation, you'd get great terms. And you'd get, you know, you would have all the advantage. I'm not saying they have all the advantage now, but that shifted a little bit because you do have some people distracted with their own portfolio companies, so they can't do deals as much. But I would think that if you've got that ability, it's nice to have the flexibility to not have to. If you need to go raise the money, then you're going to need to put your plan together. And this is where you go back and you get your materials ready and you tell people what you've done and how you've survived this time and how you plan to survive this time. And you go out and you do it the same way we always do it. You run a competitive dynamic process to go find the right partner that's the fit for you to bring that capital in. But I would expect that it's probably going to be, you know, more expensive, maybe a little bit more punitive than what you would have been looking at before this.
Do you think that, I mean, there's reports and, you know, and we're seeing it, you know, in real time that a lot of restaurants are not going to come back to business no matter what. There was some saturation to begin with, and some of this is just going to be an acceleration of a natural shakeout. We'd seen the impact on saturation, at least on the growth side of the last few years in terms of how many deals were getting done and valuations and so forth. Do you think this might potentially lend to a new, invigorated market for growth financing for emerging brands?
I do. I mean, I think it could. I mean, my gut is the ones that don't survive this time were probably already in trouble before this time started. I really do believe that. I think if you're a good company and a good brand and the consumer loves you, even if you don't have the capital I talked about, there'll be capital available to you is our gut. But if you were a challenged brand with negative comps, negative traffic, and I'm not just talking slightly negative because that was the new norm for a while. I'm talking real down, with a lot of stores on the precipice of closing. It's those brands, I think, that might be more in trouble that you're talking about that, surviving this time is going to be harder. I'd also say it's probably the mom and pops that may struggle too, to the extent that some of the government funding doesn't last long enough for them to survive. So do I expect, total door count to go down through this? I do. Do I expect it to go down some crazy number? I don't know. I probably don't, because I do think that some of the stimulus has really helped. People really are getting capital into their accounts, helping them survive this time, get to the other side and grow again. But I do think coming out of it, that won't be a terrible dynamic because, there were a lot of stores in the country and a lot of doors in the country. And to the extent there are fewer and that gives an opportunity for those that remain to have more growth, then that is a good thing.
Well, Matt, really appreciate you taking time to speak with us today and appreciate always what you and your team at North Point do. Just real great leaders in this space, helping folks get the capital or the outcomes that they desire. And, if people want to reach you, is it okay to provide your contact info?
Yeah, absolutely. Love to have you reach me. So that'd be great. And thank you, Riley. I mean, Davis Wright, Tremaine, you guys have been leaders on the front lines with helping this industry make sure we're heard in Washington, D.C. So I think we all say thank you to you for the efforts that you've made to make sure that this industry isn't forgotten during this time, because we are a key part of driving the economy here. So, yes, you can absolutely reach us. Our website is nptadvisors.com. My cell phone is 415-317-4942. So we'd love to connect, and we send our best thoughts to everybody to keep going, through this time. We will, as Kim said really, really well, we are going to get out of this. We are in this together. And we all look forward to the time we can raise a nice glass of wine together and have a great meal together in person.
Thank you so much, Matt. Everybody on the call, if you need to contact him, this man was brave enough to give his cell phone number. So really appreciate
It's the new world we're in. My office line goes straight to voicemail right now.
Got lots of questions from friends in the investment community for you. I'm sure they'll reach out directly, on what valuations will look like and so forth. I think you would advise that it depends, and it does depend. We're not sure what valuations will look like, especially emerging out of this. There's a lot of strength, and there's a lot of good brands to get behind. That's for sure. So, Matt, thank you again.
That's great. No, thank you, Riley. All right, take care, everybody.
Thank you. Well, we had a webinar on Friday. We did a landlord-tenant town hall. It was, for us, the largest, best attended webinar we've had with several hundred leaders from around the country, out of a who's who in the business participating. And I think our esteemed colleagues who were representatives from both the tenant and landlord side were obviously the reason for that, with Bill Allen and Camilla Marcus and Tom Scott, Danielle Bruno on the tenant side, and then good folks at Federal and Senrical and Biological Capital and others on the landlord side. It was a robust discussion for those who participated. The overall goal of that conversation was to facilitate collaboration between landlords and tenants. And those on the call and everybody following this knows that one of the biggest challenges right now that everybody is facing is what to do about the lease situation. Because lots of groups aren't paying rent or can't pay rent or in a situation where it doesn't look like coming back to business anytime soon, if ever, in a space is going to be possible. And there's a lot of things that are factored into that, and corporate guarantees and personal guarantees and lots of other things that need to be considered on an individual basis with each lease, which lends to a very time-consuming and cumbersome and often contentious process between landlords and tenants that then, if it moves to a dispute, needs the involvement of other parties with the courts or alternative dispute resolution folks or bankruptcy folks. And it can get really complicated and really, really expensive. And when you think of this on the scale of which we're dealing now, you can imagine how the world is just not set up to deal with this type of a problem. The courts aren't set up for it. Landlords and their legal teams aren't set up for it, nor the tenants and so forth. And so you can have a really complicated and expensive and inefficient problem that is not going to lend to the result that everybody wants, which is getting back to business as soon as possible and moving ahead together. So just to kind of reflect on some of the key points that came out of that, one a compelling reason to move towards some type of model terms in leasing is to bring in efficiency. And that's going to require obviously collaboration between landlords and tenants to find a workable construct. And the landlords need relief too. The landlords are not there to be a nonprofit and take all of the pain out of this situation. Obviously, they need help. They have obligations on their end. And understanding what those are was something that they came out of the call. They're under tremendous pressure as well. So in order to get the relief to the tenants, we got to look up to the landlords and where they have the opportunity to get relief, which is up to the banks and up to the government. And that's where a collaboration between all parties will be necessary to get some semblance of model terms and efficiency. And if we can achieve that, we're going to be on a path, we believe, as well as the restaurateurs that have all weighed in on this issue, to moving ahead much quicker, much more efficiently, and much more successfully economically with a lot of the distractions of financial carnage that will result if we don't. And so we had reached out to a number of landlords. We're seeking landlord representation on a working committee to discuss model terms. So if there's any landlords on the call right now that would like to be part of that, please email me, RileyLogeson@dwt.com. It's on the webinar invite, or I can be found online pretty easily, as well as any tenants that would like to be part of this conversation. Please email me as well. We are looking to try to move this conversation forward. Bill Allen, who was on the call last week, has kind of taken this under his wing. Bill was former president of Outback Steakhouse and co-founder of Fleming's, and he's an investor in many significant growth brands around the country. So if there's somebody that's been there and done it and really understands the importance of collaboration here and reaching some model terms, it's him. And we've got a great group of folks on board with this. So if you would like to get involved, please send me an email, because the more we can rally some consensus around this, the better we can raise it up the chain to some leaders who are in a position to make some decisions. With the leaders making decisions, we're seeing a lot of activity going on right now. We've seen the National Restaurant Association been advocating for a relief package, which Project Blueprint or Restaurant Industry Blueprint for Recovery was released over the last couple of days. They're looking for a restaurant and food service industry fund of $240 billion to help provide relief for restaurants. It has some provisions to help fix structural issues of the PPP, has some tax credits and grant programs, and a number of other features to make getting back to business more viable for folks. So that is working its way through. And so there's more attention being placed to some federal programs in these efforts. And there's also efforts on the state level. Personally, we're involved in some efforts in California that I'd like to touch on real briefly, because a lot of our audience is based in California, as operations in California. And I think the good news is, going into this, California had so many unfriendly restaurant policies and anti-business policies that it makes implementing some policies will make things easier, a lot easier, because there's a ton to work with there. I know going into this, a lot of our clients who operate there had been really struggling to adapt to all of the costly changes in California, in addition to the litigation construct in California that allows a number of really expensive and difficult lawsuits to be filed against restaurateurs by plaintiffs' attorneys who's have a cottage industry in suing restaurant clients for amounts that are relatively small, and then recouping lots in attorney's fees and creating all types of problems that really serve no useful public benefit whatsoever under the guise of being friendly to employees or something like that. So, there's a lot that can be worked on in California and elsewhere, and using that, as a model to guide some of these policy proposals will be very helpful. So some of that there will be a proposal made in California with respect to some fairly strong and business-friendly policy changes that would provide operators not only with some potential funding and some more business-friendly provisions that are available to restaurateurs in other states that allow them to be successful and profitable, but also protection against some of the lawsuits and other things that restaurateurs have faced that have made business in California so challenging and expensive and perplexing. So what is driving all of this? Why would anyone all of a sudden decide to implement policies that they otherwise would not have before this? The answer is jobs, and the sheer loss of jobs, especially to the lower 20% of the workforce, is what is going to be fundamental to driving any change. As discussed earlier, the restaurant industry has lost approximately 8 million jobs as a result of this. About 2 out of 3 restaurant workers are unemployed, and that's just a massive hole in the workforce that if it's not filled, there's going to be significant problems in a number of different markets. So, if we can show that policies are going to bring jobs back and even create jobs, we're going to be in a much better position to have policies implemented that are going to be restaurant friendly. And hopefully these policies are ones that if they're adopted, they will endure and allow everybody to be more successful in the long term. So again, this is the time to get active and to get involved. That's always been something that has been easier said than done in the restaurant business, given how busy everybody is. But please, in this time, this is the most important time of all to get involved. And if you would like to get involved with any of these initiatives, please send me an email and we will include you on our list. So now I'd like to segue into some of the federal programs that are available. The PPP, lots of you on the phone have received your funding or were denied funding. We've heard a lot of the both. For those that have it, that's great news. For those that didn't, it's been a really tough pill to swallow. We're not sure what else additional is happening with the program. Just know there's a lot of efforts out there right now federally to make money more accessible. But at the moment, nothing concrete and nothing specific has been adopted. Landis, are you here on the phone?
Yes, I am.
Is there anything going on with the Main Street loan program worth passing along this week?
Not at this time. The Federal Reserve has provided their guidance we discussed last week. They haven't provided any more additional updates. I know a number of groups have submitted additional questions about fringe issues for eligibility, but they haven't provided any more additional guidance yet. So nothing really we can contribute right now.
All right. Yeah, and I think so. This is a quick discussion today on the federal programs, but hopefully we have more next week, and we'll obviously keep anybody posted as things materialize, and it'll be big news. Everybody getting, I think, real-time updates from a lot of sources. I think as we've been navigating this, the people issues and labor and personnel issues, there's been policies, legislation that are impacting our business. Wanted to give some updates on some key ones. Aaron, do we have you here? Talk about some of the things going on in California.
Yeah, thank you. The things that are going on in California, I'll keep it brief, is that we have basically a stopgap for the FFCRA paid sick leave, California, through an executive order, passed a statewide paid sick leave related to COVID, essentially, for what it basically is food-related entities. And we can get in the nuances of it or not, but the intent of the law and where we think the guidance of it is that if you're handling food, if you're food-facing, if you're delivering food, you now have to provide paid sick leave in the same way that you would have if you were a smaller employer. And so it sets the same 500 employee threshold, except it's over, not under. And, you know, as employers, and it's effective immediately, obviously California just announced it and put it in place immediately. you know, and as employers, what you should be doing right now is getting a policy in place that tracks the executive order. So when employees invariably come to you, because it is getting to be a very difficult analysis, that when an employee comes to you and says, hey, I have to take time off work because of X, you know, a child that had their school canceled, or because of stay-at-home order, or because of this, or symptoms, or that, what set of laws to apply now? And now you have to add this to the bucket.
All right. Well, thank you, Aaron. Is Janet, are you on?
I am.
Anything to add from your perspective on the people side?
Sure. A couple of questions came up after last week's seminar when we talked about arbitration agreements, and just wanted to remind everybody that if you are interested in putting arbitration agreements with class action waivers in place when folks come back to work, that these are state-specific. There are state-specific requirements, and you'll need to be sure that in your state it's permissible and allowable to do that. For example, some questions came up around Oregon, and in Oregon, only new employees can be compelled to enter into arbitration agreements, and so that would dictate a decision to perhaps terminate and furlough employees and then bring them back as new employees. So suffice to say that there are different requirements in different states, and you should work with your local folks to accomplish that. Here in California, no additional considerations required, and in most other states that is the case, but be sure to work with lawyers on that. I think that the other thing that we have going on here are lots and lots of these orders about masks and wearing masks, and as we reopen businesses, that's going to be required. I think that we all have to think about providing them and providing enough of them that we don't make cleaning time a claim, and we don't see class action litigation around the time that employees spend either purchasing so reimbursement claims or claims for cleaning them on their own time. So just more to come on that, but I think that we're going to see a lot of class action litigation when folks come back, and we want to start looking for ways to prevent that before it happens.
Yeah, well said, Janet. If we get anything out of this call, class action waivers with arbitration provisions, at-will agreements, and get those ready and get those signed as people are coming back in. You will not regret it. So thank you, Janet. Jillian, anything from your perspective?
Hi. Yeah. Hi, Riley. Hi, everyone. I just briefly wanted to mention that last week up in Washington, Inslee released another proclamation, which was actually just a sort of an extension of the original one. But in this proclamation, he articulates that high-risk employees, employers need to accommodate those folks. And those are folks who are over the age of 65 or those who have underlying health conditions. So I think early on, we all sort of were doing that anyway, and we were laying off a lot of people anyway. So we were fine with laying off folks who told us that they had some concerns about being in the workplace. But as you start to hopefully bring folks back on in the near future, just keep in mind that you may still have some folks telling you that they have some underlying health conditions or are otherwise high risk, and employers will likely still have an obligation to accommodate those people either by doing some extra things in the workplace to make them feel safe, providing work from home opportunities if that's a possibility, harder in our industry here, but just leaves of absence. You can't discipline, you can't terminate unless it's part of a bigger layoff. But so just wanted to point out to folks to keep thinking about those high risk employees. They still may have some protection as we start to bring people back on board.
Well, thank you so much, Jillian. And thank you, everybody, for participating today. We'd like to especially thank our special guests, Kim Malik, founder and CEO of Salt and Straw Ice Cream, and Matt Kelly, managing director at North Point Advisors. We welcome any suggestions you have for any future programs. We're going to have a great one again next Tuesday, and we're here to help if you need it. So wishing all of you and your families and teams health and wellness in the interim. We will talk to you next week.